ready to get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Thanks for joining us again on the Niche Website Builder Show. Today I'm speaking with Dixon Jones. Now, Dixon Jones was there right at the beginning of Majestic SEO. He joined forces with the developer of Majestic SEO way back when it first started. And, you know, between them, they turned it into the business that it is today. So he's got some, you know, really interesting insights into Majestic. You know, if you've been in SEO long enough, then, you know, Majestic was the go-to tool. There's plenty of competition now, but it was the go-to tool at one point. Especially for looking at your kind of backlink profile. So it was really interesting to talk to Dixon and kind of hear that story. We also talked to him a little bit about his new project, in which he's done a very similar thing. He's teamed up with another developer who's got a tool which is for content optimization called Inlinks. And once again, he's trying to build this business, with this developer, from the beginning, and it's a great tool. We use it at Niche Website Builders, and it was great to talk to him about that. And really, the basis of that discussion is about why we should start thinking about entities and stop thinking so much about keywords. And it's a really important kind of concept to try and grasp in kind of modern day SEO. So it's a really interesting conversation. So I hope you enjoy that. Also, I want to take a moment to mention, use this spot to kind of mention some of the aged domains that we have on our website. So I'm going to mention one that we've got for sale at the moment on the site. We sell our aged domains as a package. So there's a site build, 100,000 words of content, and the expired domain, which we've vetted ourselves. We have a due diligence process for all our domains to make sure that they're good before we kind of sell them on our site. So the one that I'm going to talk about today is called Comic Bento, comicbento.com. It used to be a comic subscription site. So you used to get a box of comics each month on a subscription basis. So really good site, really credible. And as such has a really good backlink profile. So it's got some really good relevant backlinks from places like comicbook.com, which is a DR80, comicbeat.com, which is a 72. CAD Comic, which is a DR64. So it's got some really good links in there. And the way that we think about this site, one of the best things we think about is that could be used for is an informational site on comic content. There's just so many comic series out there. There's so many different types of topics that you could create content on. So for example, the greatest villains of all time, a guide to the Spider-Man series of comics. That kind of thing. But one approach as well that you could also take is looking at vintage comic price guides and how you go about grading comics based on the quality and condition that they're in. We've got a couple of examples on the site of other comic sites which do just this, but they also buy and sell. They're a marketplace for comics, and so that's something that I think you could make a very decent site out of it just by going pure informational content with ad revenue. But if there's always that opportunity to kind of expand the business out further down the road into kind of a vintage comic kind of marketplace. So if you're interested in that and you want to check out this domain and others that we have available on our site, just go to nichewebsite.builders/domains. And also one last thing to mention, and the tool that I mentioned that Dixon has that he's working on at the moment called Inlinks that we use at Niche Website Builders. He's got a special offer on that means you can get a month free. So the tool is there's a certain part of the tool that's free, but if you go onto the paid version, then you can get a free month of the tool as well. So if you head over to nichewebsite.builders/inlinks and fill in the form there, we can make sure that a free month gets applied to the site. Without further ado, let's move on to the show. Hope you enjoy.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builder Show. Today, I speak with Dixon Jones. Dixon Jones was the marketing director at Majestic many years ago and has since retired from that role and now works building a software tool for SEO called InLinks. So we're going to be talking about some of his history. He's got a good 20 years of experience in SEO. So we're going to be drilling into some of his past experiences there and then talking a little bit more about, you know, what he does with InLinks and how the web's changing, and also talk to him about, you know, what he sees coming down the road in the future. So welcome, Dixon.
Mark, how are you? It's lovely to see you, and I'm trying to catch you up on the beard today, so I'm trying to put it on, but it's going to take me ages to catch up with you.
Yeah, well, I know you're really busy.
Thanks for having
me. Yeah, I know you're a really busy guy. Like, thanks so much for coming on. Really appreciate it, and I really look forward to speaking to you today. I've got, you know, lots of questions about Majestic, and in particular, that's something we've used for a long time, and you know, we're already users here at Niche Website Builders of the tool InLinks. So I'm looking forward to talk to you a little bit more about that and kind of sharing that with our audience as well.
This is why I like coming on to interviews, really, with customers. That's great when a customer comes on and asks me to do the interview. It's basically it's free advertising for me, you know, and you're paying me. So, you know, thank you very much, Mark. Thank you for your customer. I do love it. And if you ever need anything on the roadmap, please just say in the chat, and we'll try and sort it out for you.
Awesome. Okay, take us back to the beginning then. So, I mean, even maybe pre-Majestic days, if that's relevant.
When I started SEO in 1999, from my own side, I used to run, after university, being president of Students' Union for a year back in the 80s, I then started running a murder mystery game business. I used to write and run murder mystery games. And the internet came along, and I wanted to build a website in 1997 or 98 for, it was probably 97 because it was using Front Page 97. Don't use Front Page 97, boys and girls. So I built this website, and the only thing I knew was I wanted to be able to knock on the door of the people that had my website in case something went wrong. So instead of going for a data center somewhere around or get your own server, which people were trying to do in those days, I kind of went for the one where I could see the building. And the only thing that had going for it was weblog files every Thursday were being processed with a web analyzer system. So every Thursday I could see that someone had come to my website from Ohio and stuff. And I kind of figured out why, and I figured out why they'd come with a, you know, from Yahoo or from Alta Vista or whatever search engine was out there. And I went to Yahoo and had a look at it, and there was a big advert at the top for Adidas when somebody typed in murder mystery games. And I thought, that is crazy. That is so untargeted. Why don't you just try and optimize for the algorithm so that you're at the top? You don't pay the advert, you know, don't pay for an Adidas ad. And so that's how I learned search engine optimization. And it kind of went on from there. So then I set up an agency until Receptional, that's still going to this day. I don't own it anymore. I'm not involved, but founded that.
What was it called? Sorry?
And then got involved in
Receptional.
Receptional. Okay. So, yeah. It was called Receptional because we originally, I was going to use the internet, or actually it was a BT thing that they had to try and do virtual receptionists, so you could sit there and have a bunch of receptionists working from home, which of course, you know, everybody does now, but back in 1998, 99, so I was thinking of making it a virtual receptionist business. And then I decided I didn't want to be a receptionist, and so I started up search engine optimization instead, which was a much better idea, I think, for me. And so I did that until about 2008, 9. I still kind of was overlapped, but 2008, 9, a guy called Alex Chudnovsky, I kind of came out with this product, sort of this raw version of Majestic that I kind of tried as part of the agency. And so I tried to get the backlinks to a website, my website, I don't know what, it cost me $10. And I press a button, paid my $10, you know, and nothing came back, an error came back. So I just, you know, that angry seeing red thing going through to support to what I assumed was some large organization. And I got an email back from the developer, Alex, saying, oh, yeah, that was a bug. I'm sorry. I fixed it. Try again now, and I'll give you an extra £10 worth of credits. And I thought, you know, once I figured out he was the only person that I knew that was getting backlinks from anything apart from back then the Yahoo Site Explorer API or Yahoo Site Explorer, which is the only thing on the planet, I thought, you know what, I know everything. I know everyone in the world that needs this product. And we kind of, so I had about a year where I knew I was going to work with Majestic. And during that time, I was in Iceland, actually, with Rand Fishkin at a conference. And he'd just set up Moz, which, of course, is another fine backlink analysis tool. Yeah. And we were on a panel. He was the MC of the panel, and I was on the panel. And I had the Majestic tool, and I was playing. And it was one of those site clinic things. And people were coming up with things, and halfway through, he said, "What are you using for this analysis? Are you using Majestic?" I said, "Yeah," but I couldn't tell him that I was going to be working for Majestic at the time. It was still confidential, which was really annoying because that's when him and Geraldine, his other half, invited me to his wedding, and I thought, you know, I've got to say no because it's deceptive. I mean, I'm not allowed to tell you that I'm about to go and work with Majestic. You've just set up, you know, you've just launched Links and a Moz and a Link Explorer tool. So I better just say no, thank you very much. And the next time I did meet him was at a wedding. And fortunately, he hardly not hit me. So, you know, Rand and I get on fairly well as a result, you know. But that could have gone badly if I played that card wrong, really. Majestic has turned into a monster, really. It's developed very nicely over the years. You know, there's other link tools on the market now for sure, but I still think that the underlying logic that Majestic does to generate its information is pretty unique. Its flow metrics are, you know, completely unique. And now that it can start looking at second tier and third tier and up to five tiers away links, you know, you can sit there and say, right, the BBC links to this page you've never heard of, to this page you've never heard of, the links to yours. Now, all of a sudden, you can see that the BBC is infecting you, infecting or affecting, depending on the nature of the link, your environment, even though you haven't got a direct link from the BBC, but you're getting links from places that are getting that halo effect. So, you know, that's still, you know, an incredibly powerful thing to have come out with. And I don't think anybody else is able to do that. Certainly not at the speed and ferocity that Majestic is able to do that. So they're still innovating. They're still doing very well. But I left that about 4 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago now, on full time. But I'm still singing the flag. I mean, waving the flag. I will always be a Majestic, you know, diehard fan. But I pulled back. It's kind of got big, and I'm a small businessman at heart, and a sort of front end kind of coal face kind of person at heart. And then this French guy turned up who had built this thing called InLinks. And so I did exactly the same thing again. So I'm very good at being number two in an organization, basically, jumping on the back of somebody else's, you know, real clever ideas and then pretending to be the front man for them. Well, being the front man, but, you know, so I hide behind, or rather, clever developers hide behind me, I think. I take the glory and they take the money. That suits me. That's all right. It's okay.
I mean, I didn't realize Majestic had that tool now, where you know you can get the, you can kind of see the degrees of separation from a large website.
Yeah.
So
yeah, so it does it for the top. You know, the problem is, of course, if you've got, you know, on average, let's say 1,000 links or 100 links even, then 100 all have 100. By the time you get to the second lot, you've got 10,000 links on it, and it's very hard to visualize. So it's kind of does the major ones. If you want to go all the way to level 5, it can be quite a busy looking chart. But you can then, they've built some funny things that you can just sit there and say, oh, that looks like a link network, and you can go do a little ring around it and just pick out the link network and stuff like that. It's quite cool. I think it's the only thing out there that's able to see things that are 2 or 3 links away. So it's a powerful piece of kit.
Yeah, that's cool. I'll definitely check that out. So take us back in a little bit. So obviously you joined forces with the developer for Majestic, and obviously yep. There was some huge growth during that time. So there must have been quite an exciting period. Like, tell us a little bit about that journey.
Well, yeah, it was great actually. So what was happening? I mean, at the time there was this free tool, Yahoo Site Explorer. So you could get your backlink data from Yahoo Site Explorer. So, and we were charging, of course. So we had this this period where we had to be better than Yahoo, which is no small, you know, no mean feat, really. I knew the guy that had set up Yahoo Site Explorer, I knew that they were not investing in the tool very much. So the writing was on the wall that probably wouldn't go on forever. But even so, to make money when there's a free product out there, you have to put a pretty good product on. So doing that was great. We, you know, had this thing called AC rank, which is a sort of Alex Chudnovsky rank. Then we kind of developed this new thing called Flow Metrics or Trust Flow or Citation Flow it was at the time. And it really was a great proxy for PageRank. The maths on it is pretty sound. It's not using the PageRank algorithm, but it's using some fairly interesting maths to try and do something very, very similar. It caught the imagination of the SEO community. I was already a speaker at SMX or Search Engine Strategies, I think it still was then. And PubCons and things. I've been at PubCon 1, which was in a pub in London. So that gave me the opportunity to talk about links. In fact, I'm wearing the PageRank algorithm on my t-shirt.
Very nice.
Today. Caught the imagination. We never really had an affiliate program for it either. So, you know, that grew without any affiliate program. I tried a couple that didn't quite work. So it really was word of mouth, genuine, you know, genuine growth. And for a while, we were the biggest, you know, we were the biggest, the best, and standing out from everyone else. I think it's fair to say that others are now competing pretty heavily in that space now. The innovation then comes in the, you know, in the second tier, and you know, looking up for tier 3, 2, 4, and 5, and they've also come out with a product for a slightly different market, which is a social media influencer tracking tool, which is also sort of Majestic sort of social tool, which kind of uses our flow metrics over Twitter profiles, so we can find out how influential individuals are within an individual topic, also our topic metrics and stuff as well. So the innovation is still going on within Majestic as well.
Isn't that Rand Fishkin's latest business as well? Something along those lines.
I didn't know he was going to do that either. So it's a bit SparkToro-ish, I suppose, because it was getting developed completely independently of SparkToro. Yeah. It's Majestic Monitor, it's called, and it's an entirely separate product. So, I think there's definitely differences, but we'll, you know, I haven't felt that we've competed with Sparkshire on that one, but maybe I haven't really been paying attention because I've moved.
He's like, not Majestic again. I can't believe it.
I'm sorry. I tried to go off to Inlinks, you know, as I tried to do, because my problem was when I tried to move sideways, I tried to move away from Majestic. I didn't want to do something that was going to compete with Majestic. You wouldn't, would you, really? You know, so Inlinks was a good juxtaposition because it doesn't do the things that Majestic does, really. So I'm still in their good books, you know, which is a good thing, really.
So before we move on to kind of talking about a little bit about Inlinks and why such a tool exists, So Majestic, you said it was just the two of you at the start, but how big was it by the time you? Yeah.
Well, it was three of us actually. It was four. As me, Steve, and Alex. Steve knew Alex before I did. And then there's also another guy called Chris, who's assistant admin. And a business that size, you do need assistant admin. I told you if I open the window, there might be some noise. I hope it's not too bad that somebody's there's a gardener out there now. So sorry about that. We kept it quite small for a fair amount of time, but eventually we did have to sort of grow that up. And it runs out of Aston University's business campus, really. It's no longer Aston University, but it's on Aston University's sort of land. We got to go and see the Queen of England for that. So it grew up, so there's a few milestones along the way. We won all sorts of best technology awards between 2008, 2009 and 2018 or whenever I moved on. So we won search awards all over the place. I won a few awards, but the one that I'm most proud of is the Queen's Award for Enterprise. We won two of those, and that involves going to see the Queen at Buckingham Palace, and along with, you know, 200 or 300 people, but sitting around for a couple of hours or standing around for a couple of hours in Buckingham Palace drinking her champagne, which is really quite cool, I have to say. You know, yeah. Good work if you can get it. So we wandered down there, and we're very grateful for the champagne.
Good champagne.
It's good. It was good champagne. And the other cool thing that happened was we did Majestic in Space. So one of our ambassadors here at the time was a guy called Mel Carson. I don't know if you've heard of him. He used to work for Bing, he came up with this idea of printing a visualization of the internet. We had this visualization of the internet. So basically, you can take all the flow metrics of every website in the world, put it into a chart, and we've got this 3D visualization which you can print on a 3D printer. So what we did was we printed that on the International Space Station. So a 3D printer went up to the International Space Station, which we helped to sponsor. I say sponsor. I'm sure it cost an awful lot more than we were involved in, but we got involved in, you know, helped to sort of promote the idea. It went up there, and obviously it was mostly there for building, you know, widgets and things to fix the International Space Station. So you didn't have to upload, you know, send up every screw and bolt and things like that. You could make them on the space station. But when it wasn't doing that, it had made something for anybody that had sort of sponsored the thing. So they printed our visualization of the internet on the International Space Station. It then came down on SpaceX, landed somewhere in the Pacific somewhere, and they flew it back to, it got unpacked by NASA and flown back to Aston University. And then I did a TEDx talk on Majestic in Space at Aston Business School a couple of days later. So that was pretty cool.
So that's in, you mean Aston is in Birmingham, do you? All right, I didn't realise it was based out there. I had no idea.
Oh, yeah, no, Majestic's very British. Well, I say British. Yeah, I'm going to say it's a very British company. Yeah. It's not. It's quite cosmopolitan. But anyway, you know, it's British.
Yeah.
British owned.
Yeah. Some British land.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. So.
No Americans were seen in the development of Majestic.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Not entirely true.
Yeah.
No American investment.
Yeah. Yeah. I knew it wasn't an American development team, but yeah, I hadn't realised that the office was based there. I don't know why, but yeah, I hadn't realised that.
Yeah.
So. let's move on to Inlinks then. So, you know, on the website, you describe Inlinks as an entity-based SEO platform. So I think it'd be quite good to kind of take it from the beginning and say, you know, what are entities? You know, what is semantic SEO and why do we care? Why do we need that?
Okay, it's really important. I mean, I think it's really important, and that's why we kind of invested this angle at it. All the tools before about 2015 must have, or 2017 must have been based on a keyword understanding, because we all looked at SEO based on keywords. You know, what's the keyword volume for this, or is it a long tail keyword or a head tone keyword? And that's kind of how SEOs still think about, you know, the world. They kind of assume that somebody is typing in "buy pizza in Birmingham," and then they care about whether they're typing in "buy pizza in Birmingham" or "get pizza," or, you know, or whatever. All these different phrases around the same concept. But ever since Google bought MetaWeb and Freebase, which is basically a machine encyclopedia, for want of a better word, so it's an encyclopedia of ideas and concepts in a sort of easy to read machine readable format. Google has been moving from thinking about things in terms of keywords and move towards things in thinking about things in terms of topics. So when you have a sentence of text, you can read through that text and say, okay, is this about a tower? Or is this about a bridge? Or is this about tower bridge? And you can run what we call a natural language processing algorithm over there and break the content down into its constituent parts, its ingredients, really. You know, basically the ingredients for this web page are tower bridge, cycling, and London, and Thistle Hotel, or whatever. So you've got all these different things that are on the page that it's talking about it, and these are the ingredients of the page. The order in which you put them in, I guess, is what makes up the context. So by doing that, Google completely changed the way in which they're organizing the world's information. Because before, they're trying to organize the world's information by, here's all the web pages on the internet, and this is what all the web pages are individually saying. Well, there's trillions of web pages on the web, on the internet, at least, and they're growing, you know, almost logarithmically. However, all of those pages are talking about the same sorts of things in different orders. So it turns out, whilst there's trillions or hundreds of trillions of web pages, there's only hundreds of billions of ideas, of concepts that make up those. So sort of the language of humans, you know, it's only in the hundreds of billions of ideas. So if they start thinking about things in terms of entities and store everything in terms of entities, then you can take a web page and say, well, this is just reflecting a number of different entities. So you can then sit there and say, okay, we're going to store the URL's information by entities. Now we know everything about a bow tie. We know where to go to find out how to tie it, how to make it, how to, you know, what color, what fashion is right. You know, so now we've got the concept of a bow tie, and then we can then spread out from there. Because if we can understand that the user is interested in the bow tie, and then they want to know to make it or to wear it or to tie it or to look good in it, you know, they can then use that to give context to the concept of a bow tie, and then they can take that information that way. So you've changed the world. They've scaled the world much better. It also happens to be much more translatable, because the concept of bow tie, when you turn it into item number KG471456, it doesn't matter whether the bow tie is, whether the reader is thinking in English or in Russian or in French or in Japanese, it's still a bow tie. So so you've got a machine language in terms of the definition of all these things. But then you can sit there and say, right, okay, this page is talking about bow ties and fashion and statements and London. So now I can deliver this information back to the user, or I can use this page over here to feed this understanding of what we understand about a bow tie. And the translation bit becomes very minor, actually. They can translate content very easily. So they don't have to, they can take some information in Japanese and it can be used to feed the knowledge graph, and then it can be used to inform a person that's answering or asking a question in English. So, of course, these kind of ideas all go around Googlers' heads, and this is how they're developing the world. So to think in terms of keywords is a bit pants, really, now, because the difference between buy a pizza in Birmingham and buy pizzas in Birmingham and Birmingham pizza delivery are really, frankly, all the same thing. And if Google's going to work that all out in the entity level, then writing for keywords is a little bit pants.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I think this could be a stupid question because I haven't thought it through, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So if we're in terms of Google as a user of Google and searching with Google, I'm searching using strings, right? I'm not searching using entities. So yeah, there's kind of some mapping that goes on. And should
there is? It's a good question, actually. Yeah. It's a good question. So the first part of Google's challenge is when you type in pizza delivery in Birmingham, Google has a few things that it can do. So it can firstly run its natural language processing algorithm over that. So talking about Birmingham, talking about pizza, talking about delivery. Frankly, it's seen three entities. It knows exactly what you want. Yeah. It also then knows where you are. If you happen to be in San Diego at the time, then that's a whole different thing. You know, maybe we're talking about Birmingham, Alabama for a start. So it's got to work out things there. It also knows what your history is as a user. So if I typed in something like, which engine is best for non-personalized search, which engine is best? Then because it knows that I keep on talking about internet marketing and things like that, it understands that engine is in the context of a search engine. Whereas if my old next door neighbor was doing it, it would almost certainly be, or if my next door neighbor was doing it there, who's a car dealer and got a Bentley in his garage, almost certainly they'd see engine and say, well, now this person's talking about the engine from the point of view of a car. So Google can use these kinds of signals at the query stage. So they're breaking that query into concepts anyway. So they've done that job. So now they're not necessarily returning the results for the exact query that you've got. And you see that all the time. You type in a typo, it fixes it. You put in some things and you see that words are substituted. So it sees synonyms and results can come back that use complete synonyms for the words that you're using. So Google starts that process of breaking things into entities when the user types in their query, which you don't have any control over. However, what you can do is say, right, these are you can use the same query to start your process or any query, but you might as well use a bit more of a headline one, a bit of a harder one. The longer tail one comes naturally. As a result of this process, you're going to get the long tail stuff anyway. But the headline stuff, you put in your headline query, pizza delivery or Birmingham pizza delivery, whatever. And then you can re-engineer what Google's doing. So if you see the top results that Google's coming back, bringing back, but you don't have to run the same analysis as Google. What you need to do is analyze the results that have come back, and then we use that to re-engineer what topics are important for that particular concept. So let's use something more generic. So use something like, pizzas in Birmingham is fine. So when you're talking about pizzas in Birmingham, then things might be important, like Uber and Deliveroo and mozzarella and recipe and Domino's and all these things may be important because these are the things that are semantically close to the concepts of pizza and Birmingham and delivery. We can extract that from the topics that the other pages are talking about and build a knowledge graph of the topics that are important for the phrase pizza delivery Birmingham. And it will probably be a very similar topic, the knowledge graph, to Birmingham pizza delivery or to, how long does it take my pizza to get from, Aston to the Gun District or whatever it may be. So they will vary a little bit, but the underlying concepts will be there, and they'll change. We'll build this knowledge graph, and then what we do is we compare against your content. So if you haven't written any content, we'll just sit there and say, right, write about these topics. If you have written some content, we'll have read yours and built a knowledge graph of the topics that you're talking about. So we've got two knowledge graphs now, one of your content, one of the content of the Best of Breed, and we just show the gaps. So it's gap analysis. Oh, you really probably should be talking about, you know, Aston more, or you should be talking about Uber more. And that may be influenced by the fact that Uber's in the results, Uber Eats are in the results. But Uber Eats are in the results, so they are, you know, by definition, starting that that conversation. So you've got to make a decision. If you're a competitor of Uber Eats, do you want to mention Uber Eats as to, you know, the fact that you can deliver cheaper, faster, you know, hotter, whatever it may be, or do you want to ignore Uber Eats and hope that they don't stay around in the search results forever? And that's a business decision, obviously, but certainly, the more that a brand gets associated with a concept, the more you're going to see them in the search results, and the more they're going to be influencing the search results. So at some point, if you type in Hoover, you're probably going to see Dyson.
Yeah, yeah, makes sense. Which ironically are both brand names.
Yes.
Yeah. Just to kind of take a step back there. So we're talking about your content optimization tool as part of Index tool, there. Yeah. You know, if you're looking at the entities that kind of what entities you should be including potentially within your page, yeah, essentially.
Yeah. And you guys use it and have some pretty good success with it, I think.
So, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's great. It's great for, you know, clustering content and all those kind of things. And you mentioned that you created your own NLP algorithm, which is different to Google's, because obviously they keep that secret. But, you know, how did you go about creating that?
Well, they don't keep it totally a secret, actually, because they have an NLP API,
yes,
and we run that as well. So we actually run our own NLP algorithm and Google's. But Google's will only return an entity when it's confident that this is what the page is about. With an SEO, we're trying to, it's not just what it's about, it's the underlying ideas and topics. So our job is to be aggressive and show you all of the entities in a block of content. Their job maybe is to just show you, just tell you what they think it's mostly about. So how we wrote it, I'm going to say is probably a trade secret, but that it is our own priority algorithm. But essentially, we did have to build our own knowledge graph. Which is based around Wikipedia, because that's the largest multinational, multilingual data source that's publicly available. But we've done a lot of work for that. So we have Ginny, who sits around every day, or doesn't sit around, well, she is sitting around every day. And she's a linguist. She's just graduating from Warwick University with a really good degree in language, culture and communications. And what she's doing is going through, and every time there's a mismatch between what our algorithm thinks a page is about and what our customers think is a page is about, I don't know if you've noticed, there's a report an error button in the system. Every time you press report an error, basically, that sort of prods Genie into going and having a look and seeing, why is it that our algorithm didn't learn correctly what that was in that context? And so the algorithm is getting updated and the context is getting updated. So that's adding synonyms in there. It's giving categorization in there, because what we've done over and above Wikipedia is categorize the whole of the thing as well. So we know, you know, search engine in the automotive category is different to, or engine in the automotive category is different to engine in the technology category. Or software category. So we're expanding that. So every time the algorithm, you know, carries on moving, it's getting better and better and better. And that's helped by users reporting errors. It's helped by us as humans. And then we tend to work on that based on our users' needs. So if somebody comes in with a very obscure topic website, we may not be very good at that yet. We may not have learned it very well, but we sort of feel a little bit like, you know, Google must have felt when they were trying to learn, you know, these things, you know, it's just iteratively getting better. So it's a pretty good knowledge graph. It's certainly fine for most everyday things. When you start getting to the archaeological impact on fossils in the, you know, in the something or other Jurassic period, then maybe we're going a little bit off piste and we might make some errors in there. But we're good at most things.
Okay, that sounds cool. So from a practicality point of view, from practical use, you know, if I'm a content publisher or an affiliate marketer, take us through the process of kind of using InLinks from, you know, beginning to end. What's the...
Yeah, there's different ways you can do it, because we haven't really talked about connecting the dots and how InLinks works on the whole site yet. We're still kind of, I guess, talking about the page level, or have been talking about how you write a content a page, but we do connect all the things together. But given that you want to optimize a page of content, or you want to write a page of content, as a content writer, you can just start in the same way you've always started. Sit there and say, please write, I want to write a page around, put keyword in here, phrase in here. So you can put in the phrase, and everything is done for you. Not everything is done for you. We don't write. We kind of figure, I mean, you can use some AI to write, but we do tell you the topics to write about. But we do provide you with an editor. So you can then start typing in the editor, and then every time you mention a concept or an idea, it pings it up and says, great, that's fine, we've added that. So you can see the percentage of optimization go up as you start writing your content. So you can sit there on the left-hand side, you can see that you need to talk about strategy, marketing and operations and dynamics. I'm just looking at my books on my back behind me. And so every time you mention those words, It you know, the little tick goes up and says, right, okay, we kind of worry, we want to talk about strategy in this particular article between 6 and 10 times. You've now written it 6 times, it will go green, you know, it's fine, you don't need to talk about it. If you start talking about 30 times, it will probably go yellow again and say you're probably over egging it. So as you write your content, then it starts magically coming up with these this sort of score increase. Or if you've already got content, it'll already have a score for you, and then you can just sit there and say, you know what, in order to get up into 85% or 90% or whatever you think is going to be acceptable for you, you need to just talk about this. And sometimes, if you've got fairly good content and you're on page 2, just adding, you know, a couple of ideas can make all the difference, and you've bounce yourself up into page, you know, page 1 or the top half of page 1, and can make all the difference. So you start just by sitting there saying, right, I want to write content on this. If you wanted to, and you wanted to start right further back, and you want to write a brand new website, then we have some ideas for how you might write that content out. And there's a pretty good Turkish SEO called Kore, who's been writing some stuff recently. He's not connected with InLinks per se, but he's been saying some nice stuff about us. But he's been written some great stuff. There's a brilliant article on OnCrawl recently about topic mapping. I think we're really the only tool out there that's trying to do it. But I think we could do better. We're going to have a chat with Corey and see how we can, you know, improve and develop on his ideas. But if you ever really want to learn about topic mapping, you know, I think check him out a little bit. It's a good thing to do. But you can we have got some tools. You can use our topic maps as a basis for writing your content as well, if you wanted to. So right, I'm going to write one page on this, one page on this, one page on this, one page on this, and then you're instead of writing a page of content about one thing, you're writing a whole website about one thing with one page per entity, if you see what I mean, more or less.
Okay. That's really interesting. So how do you, are you aware of, I assume you're aware of correlation SEO tools like Surfer and Page Optimizer Pro, Market News. What's your take on those, and you know, how does that compare to kind of InLinks?
So, well, I mean, so Surfer SEO is quite close to us in on the page side of things, in that, and that they were keyword based, but they're kind of trying to put some, they've got some NLP stuff in there now, and they've done a very cool integration with conversion.ai. If you're a bit of a black hat and you want to press a button and just create the content, and that's kind of interesting to see. It's fairly powerful, I've got to admit. But of course, then you're going off, it's a slightly different angle from you know, actually having pride in your content, if you're going to let machine do it. So it's a case of where that balance comes in. I think where we're different is I think we stack up pretty well to Surfer and Phrase and those tools. Where we're definitely have a massive added value layer is when we connect the dots. So because we have built our whole tool around entities, it's not just that we can help you write a page of content, it's also that we know all of the entities that your page of content has. So if you've got 100 pages on your website or 1,000 pages on your website, we know all of the times that you've talked about each of the different entities on each page. So you can have a look at any one page and we can say, right, these are all the entities and this is the order in which they're important. And we've got that for the whole website. So we now have a topic graph or a knowledge graph of your whole website. Now, what that allows us to do is two more things. Firstly, it allows us to create content schema, which we can go into if you want to. And the other thing it can do is it can internally link things together. So what we do is we ask a human in the loop to just verify the topics. So you can sit there and say, right, this page is about these 50 things. We think it's about these two or three on the top. These are the really important ones. Select one. Okay, this is the book. This is the page about internet marketing strategy. Fine. Every other time on the internet or on your website that you've talked about internet marketing strategy, in the actual text, we can find the anchor text that we need and link it through to the internet marketing strategy page. So what we do is we ask you to put one line of JavaScript code onto your website. If you're not a programmer, you're probably a WordPress user, you can use a header and footer plugin and just put it in, just like putting Google Analytics code in there, or you can even put it in with Google Tag Manager. So there's loads of ways to just put this one line of code in. And then that will spot what your content is and insert the links on the page as it loads, or just literally a microsecond after it loads, because we use a defer tag, which basically means it doesn't slow your website down. But anyway, it's there. And so now what you've done is you've said, okay, I'm talking about internet marketing, and internet marketing is an entity, but I'm talking about it all over the website. So where is the authority? Where does Google need to go to understand where the authoritative content is about internet marketing? Well, it's over here. And every time it sees the concept of internet marketing elsewhere on the site, it reinforces that this is where the authority is for the concept of internet marketing. Or this is where the concept is for pizzas. Or this is where the concept is for ingredients. So that internal linking now is not done by keyword. It's done by concept, by entity. And all of a sudden, I sort of see it as the website being a blur of different ideas suddenly becomes sparkly, where all of the ideas are sitting out with little ends of sparks. So it's really clear to a machine where to go for this idea, where to go for this idea, where to go for this idea. So it's kind of like a star-like kind of highlighting. So if you've got a rubbish website, fine, you've got a little star and Google's not going to send anything back there. You still have got to have good content and some authority and maybe some external authority coming, signaling that this important website. But within your website, you can really make your topics stand out to a machine using this methodology. So we've basically done all these internal linking, and then we reinforce that with the schema side of things. So at the same time at which you say this is about pizza or strategy or whatever, firstly, that strategy relates usually back to a Wikipedia page. It doesn't have to, but you know, we know that Google understands Wikipedia pages very well, and used Wikipedia pages as part of its training set. So we can then write some schema, which you also don't need to understand what it all is, but it just sits there and says, right, this, Mr. Google, this page is about this thing And in case you don't know what this thing is, here's the Wikipedia page for it. It talks about this thing, and here's the Wikipedia page. And it's about these things. It mentions, another bit of schema, uses the mentions tag to say it mentions this, 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 and this, and this. But they're subservient to these main ideas at the top here. So what we've done is try to give Google all the clues. So we've tried to turn it from implicitly understanding the content to explicitly telling it what the main elements are on the page. So you've hopefully written great content because you've now got the ability to check with all the competitors. You've then defined that and crystallized that with the schema on the page, and you've reinforced it with the internal links. And Surfer and MarketMuse and those things don't do those last two bits in that way. I don't think there's anything else that does that. Internal linking by other tools are done maybe in slightly different ways. You can sit there and say, every time you mention strategy, link to here. That's not the same thing. That's not the same thing, because strategy could come and have different contexts and may not be an important idea on the page and therefore shouldn't have a link.
Okay. Really interesting. Thanks for sharing that.
Have I blinded and blinded all your customers, all your users with science there?
No, I think that's really good. That's really good and detailed. I think that really clarifies it. And I think, you know, within our industry, I think people are still catching up. You know, a lot of people still aren't working with entities, and I think it's time.
It's always a way, isn't it? I think you know, it took a long time for people to start thinking that links were important. You know, eventually they got there. And of course, SEOs love bright, shiny new things until the point at which they break them. So I can imagine some SEOs coming into our tool and saying, okay, you know what? I'm just going to make this entity about thing about everything on the page, and it's going to be about all these things. And they'll just break it because... you know, we try and discourage that. We try and make it so you can only have one page about strategy or one page about pizzas. You can get around it if you want to, but you know, only if you're probably not going to make your world any better by doing so. You know, because I guess in a way it is. If for anybody that's been in SEO for 200 years like I have, you know, there used to be a keywords tag, meta tag, which kind of Google never used as a concept, but it definitely was. Was at some point completely obliterated by SEOs and completely pointless. This isn't that. You know, people are just stuffing keywords in randomly. You know, this isn't that, because if you carry on trying to make your page about everything, sooner or later it becomes about nothing really. So you've got to keep that kind of that little sort of star shaped thing that sort of point makes the topic really stand out as crystal. You know? I don't know if anyone understands when I'm talking about the star thing. I'm gonna have to write a blog post.
No, that sounds cool. So that totally makes sense. And you know, we're finding very similar things. You know, we run a service now which is we call our FAQ content service, so that we find that's a really great way to complement existing articles and add in kind of some of these other entities and stuff. So
yeah, of course, didn't mention that we also have FAQs in there, a question finder in there as well. So yeah, because of course another tool that's out there is Answer to the Public and things like that that are sort of turning words into questions and what people are using. We look at, you know, people also ask kind of ideas, and so we have a generator for generating questions as well. So we can now. Any topic, you can go into the topic details button on links, and we'll show you related topics. And then underneath that, if you scroll all the way down, it will just show you loads of questions that people have been asking about any individual topic. And then also you can put in a keyword, and then you can it'll just generate questions on the fly as well. But this idea of being able to create questions is a quick route to, it's not a quick route to writing it, because you've got to write the answer to the question, but to finding the questions, you know, that's quick. And then, you know, Mark Mars then has to write the answers.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no, that's cool. Yep. All right. So looking to the future then, looking forward, you know, this, you know, we've had some huge changes over recent years, really. It's just the algorithm's changing.
That's true.
You know, we have to kind of start again in some ways. But you know, what is there anything that you kind of see coming that You know, what's your take on the SEO landscape, I guess, in first, and then, you know, what is it that you might see coming that the rest of us don't see coming?
I think the passage indexing is the thing that I'm really interested in. Going back to Majestic about 2 years ago, I think it's 2 years ago, maybe a little longer now, decided to start dicing web page content into 40 different sections. So every 5% of the page, it'll show you where your links are within a 5% margin on the page. So it'll break down a page. Every time it sees links on that page, it will show you, you know, where they are on the page, whether they're an internal link or whether they're an external link, and kind of divide things out. And then sort of it's trying to work out context a little bit within that snippet, within that 5%. And this idea is really interesting because now Google is talking about passage indexing. There's a lot of research around that goes back way before Google even, around trying to understand a corpus of text. If you try and analyze text in paragraphs, for want of a better, you know, passage, you'll probably get a better understanding of the underlying concepts than if you try to read the whole web page and then try to do an algorithm of the whole web page. And I think that's the same for a human being. If you think about a human being, you read a paragraph of text, it makes sense. If you even if you jumble those sentences up, you probably get a pretty good idea of what the paragraph is saying. If you jumble up the sentences of a whole page of text, it becomes a lot less easy. A whole book becomes very, you know, very difficult to understand. So so there is quite a lot of research out there saying that, you know, looking at things in blocks rather than the whole page as a whole is a better way of running algorithms over the content. So this idea of passage indexing, whilst, you know, Google hasn't been particularly I haven't read specific things about it, I think that it's makes for an interesting development, because you could have a 3,000 word article and Google starts to become interested only in, you know, one paragraph of it. Yep. We are seeing that already when you type in a phrase now, it's highlighting the section on the page that it's going to and stuff, which is quite clever. So I think that that will make a long-term a change to the way in which we write things. I think we'll start going back to maybe writing things with slightly less length, but maybe break them into smaller sections, well-defined sections, and understand that Google's understanding the sections independently of each other. And that's going to take a little bit of a different thought process. And it plays well to Inlinks, who's already trying to understand concepts, you know, at a very micro level. So it's looking at a sentence of text and seeing the entities within that sentence, and then connecting it up to the page that's about that text. So I think passage indexing will become pretty important. But this move towards entities is going to go way beyond your content on your web page. It's already there in Google Discover. If you've got an Android phone, I don't, but I'm told if you have an Android phone, you wake up in the morning, it notices that you're interested in hiking. So it says this page might be of interest to you, and it's a page about hiking. So it's taken that entity that you're interested in, found something that's you know, trending on the internet that they think is interesting, and putting it in there. And certainly we were very surprised when on Inlinks, when we started practicing our own medicine, we started finding our content appearing in Google Discover occasionally, and that's only appearing when somebody's interested in SEO. Yep. So that's a great thing, you know. So entities are getting more and more pervasive in the underlying ecosystem, and that's good to look at. But this idea of thinking in smaller bite-sized chunks is also a thing that I think is very interesting to look at moving forward as well. The other scary thing. And it was scary, it depends on your opinion, is this ability to automatically write content. So Surfer SEO have already got an integration with conversion.ai, and you can kind of, you know, write some content by machine. You can also use the topics that the Inlinks have and put that into a content writing system, and it will come out with some interesting content as well. And I tried it on my homepage of DixonJones.com. So DixonJones.com was written by a machine right now, just topped and tailed a little bit to make it work. So I took the entities from the page audit, put it into the Inlinks system, but then put it into an automated writer thing, and it's not bad really. So I think that's going to cause some challenges for Google.
Mm.
They clearly, and for humans, I think clearly humans would rather think that their content is being written by an educated human being, even though it's probably better if it's been written by a machine educated computer. But that's at some point going to be a leap, and eventually the machines are going to be talking to the machines, and we're going to be led by some very bizarre mathematics, I think. So I don't know where that's going to go, but it's obviously, I'd say it's not good. I'd say it's potentially not good for society, but you know, we've been moving that way as a species forever and a day. We're moving more and more like ants, and we're just finding ways to communicate ideas across. And you know, it doesn't matter what species you go to. There's herd mentalities have always happened. It doesn't happen to be right. You know, if we moved to this new house, it's got lots of birds in the garden. You know, if all the birds are on the ground there and I clap my hands, then they're all going to fly away. There's no logical reason for them to do that. Well, there might be a theoretical reason, but you know, there's no rational reason when they know that I'm not one that's feeding them. So why do they all run away? So herd mentality just happens, and we're just moving into an interesting era. But it's just a development of going from Ludditeism to, you know, the industrial age to the computer age to the AI age, and all we're really trying to do is get our species working in the hive mentality. So you know, and so the Chinese are already ahead of us on that one, because they already have a political structure that gives them a hive mentality. So you know, we're playing catch up on that. Sorry, I'm getting into philosophy now. I love talking philosophy. I think it's really interesting. So
awesome. Well, that's yeah. Well, one last question then before we wrap it up. So do you think over the last decade, do you think it's a higher bar to entry for new SEOs into internet marketing, or do you think with the tools actually things are easier?
I used to say it was getting higher and higher and higher. It's one of the reasons why I ran away from being running an agency, because it was really hard. Clients are really hard. Clients don't, you know, they don't understand it, and then when they do understand it, they expect, you know, miracles from you, and it's a hard world to be in a sea of a trillion web pages. So I was saying it's harder and harder and harder, but this move towards concepts is interesting. The fact that everything moves so quickly, I think, is interesting, because new SEOs have the advantage of not having the baggage. A long tooth SEO like me has to really work to change their mindset. I mean, I had to sit there and write 40,000-50,000 word kind of thing on the semantic SEO guide just to get my head away from thinking in terms of keywords. Admittedly, it ended up as useful content now working into an ebook, hopefully. But new SEOs, as long as they start learning from sensible sources instead of hearsay, I think is actually, they can get up to speed reasonably quickly if they want to, but preferably not try and do it all. Don't try and be the webmaster that's trying to, you know, if you're doing site core, you know, speed analysis, and you're playing with htaccess, and you're playing with entities, and you're playing with JavaScript, and you're playing with code, and you're playing with this, and you're playing with that, and you're playing with hreflang, at some point you're going to break, and you're going to be no good at any of it. So you have to accept that the role is now too big for one person, or should be too big for one person. There's a few people that can you know, do everything, but you don't need to do everything. You need to be good at the bit that you're going to be doing, and make it a reasonably large bit. So you know, whether it's going to be I'm going to write all the content for affiliates and website owners, or whether it's going to be I'm going to host this thing with using, you know, WP Engine because it's fast and furious and quick, or I'm going to be the person that goes through every page and makes it Yoast optimized, or whatever it's going to be. You know, you need to know what you're doing, know why you're doing it, but don't try and do it all. And when you don't know it, just say, I don't know. I think the biggest mistake for SEO gurus is that they don't say, yeah, I don't know enough. They do say it depends way too much. I don't like the it depends. I think it depends is a really unhelpful answer. I don't know is a much more useful answer.
I agree. That's a good tip. So yeah, thanks for that. Okay. Where can people find more about you? Where's the best places to go?
Well, I mean, if people haven't heard of Majestic and haven't tried Majestic, or maybe use a Moz or a Ahrefs or a Semrush's backlink analysis tool, do have a look at Majestic. It's a lot better than you might think. That's at majestic.com. That cost me a lot of money, and that's the main. If you want to know about the Inlinks tool, we have a free version of Inlinks, so just go to inlinks.net. and sign up for the free system. That means you can put up to 20 pages on your site, or you can do a couple of page audits for free a month, and put 20 pages. You can link 20 pages together, so you get the underlying principles. If you go onto Inlinks and then press the demo button, there's we're trying to sell you a demo basically. If you do the demo, then you get a free month basically. So what we haven't, our technology is not clever enough to actually give you your first month free, so you actually have to sign up for a month and we give you your money back if you've done the demo. But we won't give you your money back unless you've done the demo, because otherwise you'll just sign up, think in terms of keywords, won't get it, and it only takes about 30 minutes and you're switched on. So a 30 minute one-to-one demo with Karine probably, and you're good to go. So please go to inlinks.net. If you want to find me, Twitter is Dixon_Jones, or DixonJones.com. But probably best to see me through Inlinks.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you very much for your time. And
Mark, thank you very much for having me on. I've enjoyed it. I like singing the breeze about entities and links and things like that. So it's nice to come on and be able to do it.
Great. Thanks. Well, enjoy the rest of your day.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks again for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. If you're listening to the podcast version of this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please rate and review, as this will allow us to grow our audience and create more shows like this one. If you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe to the channel and click on the bell to be the first to know about any new episodes that we release. Until the next episode, goodbye.